You're in a desert walking along in the sand, and all of a sudden, you look down, and you see a tortoise that's crawling towards you. You reach down, you flip the tortoise over on its back. The tortoise lays on its back, its belly baking in the hot sun, beating its legs trying to turn itself over, but it can't. Not without your help. But you're not helping. Why is that?
I like to eat escargot.
That's snails, but okay. You're given the calfskin wallet for your birthday. What do?
Eat it.
You've got a little boy. He shows you his butterfly collection plus the killing jar.
Set them free.
You're reading a magazine. You come across a full-page nude photo of a girl. You show it to your husband. He likes it so much, he hangs it on your bedroom wall. The girl is lying in a bearskin rug. What do?
Pass.
Mr. Gold, you are a replicant.
I'm a replicant? No!
You are a replicant. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us. It is June 25th, the 19th anniversary of the release of Blade Runner, which Scott just took the Voight Comp test, and it's very, very sad, his results. I was very displeased with that. I mean, eating a cask and wallet, I don't even know what that's all about. Anyway, welcome to episode 18 of Tech Bacon.
Welcome.
So hope you guys have had a good week. Once again, busy week, lots of stuff.
Seems to always be.
Yeah, well, especially like during the summer, I feel like it's been, you know, nuts lately.
Yeah, that's kind of true.
But where would you like to start today, sir? Should we start with Final Cut Pro?
Yeah, that's been dominating
the
blogosphere and the news and the
definitely late and Conan night and Conan talk. O'Brien. Yeah. I watched that this morning. It was very funny. Conan O'Brien did he and his editing staff did a piece on the release of Final Cut Pro, which was very funny. It was them talking about how much they love the software, and there was not a single decent cut in the entire piece. But we'll put a link to it in the show notes. But it was pretty funny.
It was very funny.
Yeah, it was very funny. Yeah. Anyway, we talked about this before. The Final Cut, you know, Pro was going to be coming out. It came out. Nobody really knew it was going to be
Final Cut Pro X.
Final Cut Pro X. No one knew the exact release date, and then Tuesday it just popped up there in the App Store, $2.99. Shake and is it Motion?
Compressor.
Compressor and Motion.
Yeah.
Rather, were both available for $50 add-ons. Those also used to be part of the huge, you know, Final Cut Pro Studio suite that cost, you know, $1,000 or whatever.
Right.
And now they're both available.
Great.
Everybody was really excited.
Point.
Yeah. Everybody downloaded it, and then lots of people started getting really upset.
Yeah. And people got very upset. Yeah.
And it was interesting. Well, I mean, I found not only the reasons why that it made people upset, not, you know, I was surprised that those existed in the first place. And I was also surprised at how much, you know, noise that was actually generating as well.
Well, I think it's
for
just
what essentially seems like a niche.
People.
Yeah. And I think it's a very, very
in general
influential group of people in terms of, like, you know, Twitter and, you know, and
well, also, you know, like, you know, Apple, they do this kind of thing a lot. It's not uncommon for them to revamp a piece of software,
sure,
and then fix it as they go, kind of thing. But it's, to me, it's different. They should have handled it differently for a very pro piece of software as opposed to their consumer software.
I agree. And just to give a point of reference, basically, Final Cut Pro.
We should actually tell people exactly what.
I agree. Final Cut Pro X came out, and we'll give you some backstory. Nonlinear editors for, you know, editing on a computer basically instead of on a flatbed or Moviola, you know, with physical film, started basically the late 80s, early 90s. There have been lots of people that had tried it over the years. Like EditDroid, Lucasfilm had one very, you know, famous Darth Vader looking, you know, booth setup. And nothing really caught on until Avid kind of broke through. I think in 89, Media Composer first came out.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
And they started going and catching on. And one thing that was really, really great and why they were able to go and take over in a lot of ways is that Avid said, we're not going to try to reinvent the wheel. We're going to basically go and take all the existing, you know, workflow and paradigm and terminology and bring it over to the computer. So if you've ever, you know, been on an Avid or in Final Cut Pro and wondered why a folder is called a bin, it's because, you know, and when you were editing back in the old school days, you'd actually have a bin that would have all your, you know, your film clips, and that's what you'd be, like, you know, pulling them from and then, you know, cutting them together. So basically that workflow was basically originated, and it hasn't changed really since, you know, since then.
Right.
You know, it's been around for a long time, and nothing's really changed on the digital side. And so,
back in the day, Avid was the de facto standard.
Correct.
And then Final Cut came into the game. It took them a while, but eventually they've got like 50% of the market share. They're the number one editing suite for professionals right now.
Are they really?
Yeah.
No. But it's just because when they first started too, they weren't trying to go necessarily target that market. They were kind of going as more of an upstart thing. But as, you know, people adopt them over time, because you didn't, you know, with Avid, those kind of solutions, you need a proprietary hardware. It's a much more expensive solution. It's like $20K versus $1,000 for just a piece of software,
right,
that runs on your current laptop essentially.
And then all of a sudden, you know, a few years ago, Peter Jackson's editing his, you know, feature films with Final Cut.
And the Coen brothers have been doing it for years.
Yeah.
And so it's very popular. Walter Murch uses Final Cut Pro. And so it's basically, you know, has a big footprint in the industry. Now, what is interesting is they haven't updated the suite in a while. And there were lots of things that people felt, you know, needed to get improved upon. And so they pre-announced this version several months ago and showed a preview of it. Lots of things that made people very, very excited, but lots of things were missing that had people, you know, they were a little bit nervous about it, basically, because there are certain things that seemed they would need to be there for it to be a professional tool. And when this dropped on Tuesday, those things were not there. And to give you an idea of, like, you know, what kind of stuff it is, there's things, you know, multi-camera editing. Final Cut Pro is arguably the best full, you know, multi-camera editing platform where basically you could go and have, you know, let's say you shoot a scene with three or four cameras. You put them, line them all up on the timeline. And you can just bop from one to the other and cut it almost like in real time.
Right.
And basically certain things for delivering a film or, you know, a professional product like OMF allows you to go and, you know, output your audio so like a professional person can then go and like mix it and sweeten the sound.
Right.
XML, which basically helps you go and export things for grading, color timing, that kind of thing. And EDL, which is basically your edit decision lists. And that allows you basically to go and create a just a text file that's a list of all the cuts in the project. So if you're really old school and somebody's cutting film, they can work off of that. If you want to go and give it to another editor
or to an effects house that is working on effects. I mean,
they use that to go and generate that stuff. And so what was interesting is Final Cut Pro happened. There's lots of rethinking in terms of the actual interface and the way you use a piece of software to edit. All that notion of, you know, taking it over from the physical, you know, old school realm bins and that kind of stuff, that's all gone. And they've kind of rethought it as a purely digital thing, which
they went very iMovie, iPhoto like.
Well, I think there's a couple things. I think, first of all, it's great that they rethought it. It's very important because, like, nobody had. And I think we are in a world now where everything is digital, and that paradigm doesn't really necessarily apply, that metaphor.
Sure.
You know? Much like, I guess you could say, like, you know, the desktop metaphor on computers is breaking down. It's a similar thing because, like, you know, we're getting so much more storage. Things are much more complex. You can do things, you know, in digital nonlinears that you couldn't do on old school stuff.
Absolutely.
However, how you go and implement that and deliver it in the marketplace and get people on board is up for debate. And I think that's where the big, you know, consideration was, because they've delivered this thing. And there are things that make it much more accessible for the everyday user, which I think is smart for Apple because it opens up their customer base.
It opens it up to the prosumer base.
Exactly.
It opens it up to the people that want a little more than iPhoto and are willing to cough up a couple $100 for a beefed up version of what they already kind of know how to use.
Totally. And it's but what was interesting, the fact that they didn't implement all these features, it was just very, very strange, because I would think if you want to go and rethink the way people do this stuff, you would go and make it, you know, appealing to the pro level user, and then, you know, they would help. I mean, same thing has happened with Final Cut already. They would become, you know, ambassadors for the brand, basically.
Right.
And they would kind of go and, like, encourage people to use it, and it would trickle down then to the other users. I don't know why they did it the way they did. Already they've come out really strongly and they've said, like, okay, you know, all these things, multi-camera, all that stuff, this stuff is coming.
But
it's just coming in other updates very quickly. That's what I don't get.
There was no timeline. Nobody was – it was not like we need to make the date for anything in particular.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like – there was no huge – and it's not one of those pieces of software where the anticipation is crazy big and everybody's waiting for it.
I think they are getting pressure. We're getting pressure because it was so old. But here's what I think actually happened, I'm guessing.
I mean, they could have gone 6 months and it wouldn't have been a big deal.
I think they decided to go and do this rethink. They decided to go and they wanted to get out as soon as possible. They wanted to go after a broader market. And I think that they know – despite all the noise that's happening, what you're really hearing is people saying, well, fine, I won't upgrade until it has this features.
Well, sure.
No one's really saying I'm going to jump to, you know, Media Composer or I'm going to jump to Premiere. And
right.
So what I think one thing that's really interesting and very telling, I think, about the update is that you can't import old projects from it. Everybody goes, that's ridiculous. That's terrible. It's only terrible if they're saying this is a one-to-one replacement for the old product. Basically, I think that's a clear – they should
but
just say
in general,
so.
I mean, wow.
I agree.
You know.
I mean, I'm thinking that
it's like then you. I mean, people do work on projects for many years, and they also come back to old projects. So that means for a very long time, people are going to have to. And this is for years in the future. Now, people are going to have two systems.
Yeah, I don't think it will be that way forever.
You think they'll be able to import?
I think. Yeah. And basically, I think they, for whatever reason, they made the decision to go and ship the core of what they had. Maybe because they thought the pro users would stay around for another year. They could, you know, they could afford to go and move them away.
There's no way this helps them, because I just don't understand.
I think it expands. I think it expands the customer base far beyond just the pro user. And I think
user. I'm talking about the way they released it, not what they did. What they did, I think, is actually great in general.
Oh, yeah.
But I think the way they did it doesn't make sense.
I'm saying they had to go and evaluate, you know, what was more important. I think if they said, okay, we have to go and wait another 6 months or a year to ship it, or we can get this out now for regular people, I think probably pushing the App Store as well as a big incentive
probably.
Is probably part of it as well.
But I mean, imagine if it did come out with all the features there that they say they're going to implement, right?
Oh, it'd be fantastic.
And the reviews were amazing.
I agree.
The average Joe at home goes, oh, wow, these reviews are amazing, and it's only $300. I'm going to buy it. Now the average Joe at home is reading these articles and it actually is working against Apple.
I think they probably made a decision. They have to wait 6 months or a year to not deliver anything, mm-hmm. or deliver part of it now and hope that the pro users will stay along. And they kind of know they will. I think that's the call they made. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying, I think that's the only strategy that makes sense.
But it does open the door for people to start looking around, whether they end up jumping ship or not.
Sure.
It's a door that probably wasn't open.
I agree.
These people probably weren't even, it wasn't even in their mindset, but now they're like, oh, well maybe there is something else out there. There probably isn't, but
I think there. I mean, I think there, there definitely is. I mean, Premiere is much better than it used to be back in the day.
Yeah,
Premiere used to be terrible, but it's not, you know, like it used to be.
I mean, like have you used iMovie at all? Just in general, you'll see where I'm going.
I don't use iMovie because it doesn't offer enough, you know, control.
You have Final Cut, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've tried to use iMovie and I felt the same way.
Yeah. The previous one I liked, the newer one I didn't. It's just because it's not specific enough. And that's the one thing that's really different is that editors in particular, people that are used to working, you know, intellectually a very, very specific way. You get your head around how you're, you know, putting a product together in a very, very specific way.
Sure.
And to kind of change that up will happen over time. And it's a huge shock to the system, which is why I think they'll support both. I mean, maybe not officially support, but they'll both will exist in tandem for a long time.
One of the other features, and they said that you can do it. It just seemed – I was reading – I don't remember exactly how, but I was reading how to do it. But one of the big things that these editors do is – they'll take the entire project and hand it off on a hard drive to somebody mm-hmm. else and they'll load it up in their computer. The way the files are stored now, you can't just do that.
You can actually. You can.
Not in the same way. There's actually a process to it.
But
I read from the response from Apple, like they say how you can do it. You can do it, but it's not literally just pop the whole thing off and send it away. You actually have to
it's different because of the way the media is stored as well.
Well, that's what I mean.
And that's another thing. Basically, instead of having – and this is one thing I really don't get. They basically change it from having – you know, you could have certain – the media for certain projects showing at a certain time. They change it so all media for all projects on a device are showing at the same time, which I guess is great if you are running it on your laptop or you're like a home user. But if you're a pro user, you're cutting a Pepsi spot. You don't want the Coke people visiting and seeing that you're doing that or vice versa.
It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And so that's to me, it's very – there are obviously conscious choices.
Do you think that they would have – they're at the point they're ready to release, right? Let's bring in Hollywood's top 10 editors and show them this and see what they say.
They've done that before. That's
but
what
I feel
I
like
get.
They didn't do it for this. There's no way.
It's very, very weird. It's very, very weird. And it's like I keep trying to go and figure out the strategy behind it because all of these things are strategic decisions. But like what it is, it's the only thing I can think of the basis.
I mean, if you take away for a second, just take away the pro aspect of it mm-hmm. and say, okay, this is now a prosumer device for people that were trying to get them to upgrade from iMovie.
Right.
I totally get it.
Or if they
released 100%. But it seems like they just completely dismissed the core base.
Well, I think also if they had released – Final Cut Express is a slimmed down version of the application that they used to sell for like $200.
They stopped selling
That's
it.
That's gone now. Yeah. If they'd gone and introduced, rethought it, you know, Final Cut Express and kind of – so you gave it to the prosumer people first and then brought it into like the full cut Final Cut version, that would have made sense
totally
as well.
Totally would have made sense.
So I think there's no question that they – no matter what the strategic decision was, this was not a good call.
No. It was a blowback in their face. I mean I do like from what I've been reading – I like the changes. That's like the changes. A lot of them are really cool,
and they're very smart.
And
it makes a lot of sense, given that we're in a digital world.
And, you know, and the fact that 64-bit, you can use way more memory, renders on the fly, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But and I'm all for that. The exclusion of some core features, like actually getting rid of features?
Well, it's very
– why do you get rid of features?
It's weird because a lot of people – David Pogue had a big article that was basically a combo with Apple PR and trying to go and do some damage control about the whole scenario.
I think I saw that one.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the one you read where they talked about the way you could go and move the media. Yeah. And it was funny because the end of the article, he goes and talks about the notion that, you know, Apple releases, you know, focused – simplified products that work amazing and then goes and develops them over time with constant iteration, which is true. And I actually believe that's the way they operate. The problem is it doesn't really apply in this. I felt it was a bit of a cop-out. That's like they replace other products, but they make sure the functionality is still there. They replaced ADB with USB. They pulled out floppies, but they gave you a CD, so you could pretty much do the same thing. This is akin to like, you know, replacing like the iPod Nano line with just the iPod Shuffle line, where it's like, yeah, it's kind of the same thing, but there's some core functionality. That's the reason you chose that device. That is gone.
Right.
And how it is, it doesn't seem like it works. works yet for pro users. I think they're going to get there. They've already pledged to do updates. They've already pledged to do updates rather than yearly like they do within a matter of months. Sure. So I think they're rolling this stuff out very quickly, but it's just odd. And I don't really buy them, you know, adding that maximum about the way Apple operates in this case. It isn't really applicable.
No. Yeah. I'm with you. Yeah. And we're along the lines of pretty much everybody out there that's been discussing this. And the thing we talked about earlier with the Conan guys, I was dying laughing.
Oh, it was great.
Because it comes on and he's like, our editors love Final Cut X. And then they show this piece and the edits are just jumbled and the audio's out of sync. And they're
very funny. Yeah.
Well, you said we'll post a link to that.
Oh, yeah, we'll post a link, definitely. Yeah.
That just had me laughing pretty hard.
Yeah. Conan always has me laughing. But yeah.
Very true. Yeah. We like Conan.
Yeah. I thought you were a Jay Leno guy.
No. Oh, God.
Remember that time you were like, you had a Jay Leno shirt and you're like, I love Jay Leno?
No. No.
Yeah, remember that you threw a party when Conan got kicked off and
I'm gonna like
Jay Leno's taking I could have sworn that you were a Big Leno guy.
Oh God, no. God no, jeez. Conan, Team Coco all the way.
Team Coco. Yay, it's for everybody.
Yay. What else we got?
Well, one thing I'm gonna go and loop around and back on from last week. RIM, our friends Research in Motion. After all the terrible news last week, they announced that they were cutting the forecast for Playbook sales down by 2/3. They'd announced so it's, you know, even though they you know they'd shipped however many that was, you know, 500,000, 800,000, whatever it was,
last
they're now
ditch effort
cutting the forecast. They don't really expect to go and sell as many as they could. Now, I want to make a pledge here that we're not going to go and rip on RIM anymore because it's like
we're going to still report.
Right,
but,
it's like kicking a blind, deaf dog at this point. And I like dogs.
Although, I want to put like a little footnote to this. And I agree with you. We should not really do that. But if the CEOs do something just crazy town again, we have to.
We can talk about them. I think we should lay off the company because people are getting laid off. That's not cool.
Which is true. Yeah. Which is true. It's not cool at all.
Yeah. However, I will not have a problem making fun of either one of those two CEOs getting laid off. Because I think that should happen.
I agree. And did you see the thing that they a lot of their money was in stock options for the company?
Oh, was it?
Oh, yeah. So they used to be extremely wealthy people, and now they're just a little wealthy.
That kind of sucks for them. They're not super mega rich. They're just kind of rich.
Yeah.
Poor guys.
Because the way the stock dropped, like they lost a
fortune. You know, they have great haircuts, though, so I don't feel that bad for them. They have great hair.
They're going to be fine. They're going to be begging for jobs at other smartphone companies.
No one's going to hire them. They should just, you know, they'll be good. Yeah. Right. They'll be good. Quote unquote.
Quote unquote. So no more Research in Motion bashing.
No more glee. I think that's what we say.
And I'm actually not happy about it anymore. It's making me a little upset.
Well, at a certain point, it's just depressing.
Depressing. Yeah. It's not.
And once as an intellectual concept, them being lame is all well and good, but actually having, you know, affecting people's livelihoods, that kind of sucks.
Yeah, people losing jobs.
It's not cool.
Not cool.
Yeah.
We don't like that.
But those two CEOs still have great hair.
I'm envious.
Another thing that popped up this week, and literally popped up as in no one knew anything about it. It just randomly was there, and some blogs were like, hey, what's this? Best Buy.
Music cloud service.
Indeed, sir. You want to give the lowdown?
Sure. Out of nowhere – at the beginning of the week, all of a sudden people started reporting that on Best Buy's site, there was the Best Buy Music Cloud service and, you could sign up for it and start an account and, you know, use the service. However, there was no PR. There was no mention of it. There was nothing. It was just there. It was very, very strange. And not only was it there, it was completely unusable.
Yeah, it was really not usable.
It's not usable.
You could download software for it, but like the client for your desktop, and I guess the Android app was live.
Yeah, and the Android app was live.
But that was all. And then like you kind of would load it up, and it would supposedly scan stuff, and it just didn't really do anything.
It didn't work. It didn't work. Yeah. And there was and people weren't. I don't know if people just weren't researching it because I was able to find some pretty good info that I haven't seen out there.
Yeah.
Which we're gonna exclusively share with our peeps. We'll talk more about. Conceptually of it, Brian hates it. I actually think it's interesting, but we'll get into it.
I don't hate it. I think it's pointless. I don't understand the strategic point of it. But we'll
you're not a fan.
A second.
You're not a fan. You don't get it.
It's not that I don't get it. I don't think they get it.
Oh, fair enough. Fair enough. So in Europe, Best Buy UK actually launched this service already a while ago called My Music Anywhere. And if you go to the UK site, which I'm surprised none of these bloggers or news reporters did, you can see exactly what the service is supposed to be.
Well, I'm surprised Best Buy didn't say like, oh, hey, whoops, it's not live yet. Go check out the UK version if you want to know what the service is. I think they're
embarrassed, man, because this thing is
– they should be. It's terrible.
And a little more info. What happened was – first of all, it was unusable. You couldn't use it. You could sign up for it and download the app, but it didn't work.
Right.
It didn't work. It didn't work. Then come yesterday and today, when you go to the site now, the login is not working, at least for my account anymore. Right. It now says Music Cloud Beta on the top of the screen, which it did not say. And you can sign up for the beta account. And I tried it. I got an email back saying you're being considered for the beta. So, and this is all just speculation, but I'm guessing the live site without the beta and all this stuff was a mistake.
Yeah. And it's to give
it, I don't think it should have been, it just doesn't make sense because it was completely non-functional.
Yeah. And I think just to give background on what this service is, basically the Best Buy Music Cloud is a music locker service where basically they will go, you'll download a desktop client application. It will scan your iTunes library only. So basically you have to have iTunes installed.
Right.
And then basically it will go and do a scan and match, much like iCloud is going to do. And it has a library. It's partnered with the company. Well, actually, it seems like it's licensing the technology from a company called Catch Media.
Well, because like Catch Media doesn't offer their own service. They only offer the technology.
But it's their library and their license is
right,
actually.
Right, but you can't go to Catch Media and sign up for this service.
Oh yeah, they don't provide a
they
consumer
don't provide
facing
a consumer service.
Correct.
They provide the
yeah. They basically they allow people to go and you know buy their service and whatever and brand with their brand on top of it. They have 6 million tracks, and basically you can go and do the scan and match thing and then listen to your music in the cloud. There's a web client and there's an Android and a BlackBerry client. There's an iOS client as well. But here's the thing: there's a free version of this service that they offer, and that allows you to go to listen to 30 seconds of any of your songs in the cloud.
But here's the thing: on the UK site, if you look at the specs. You can listen to all your songs in the online mobile version. I mean, the online version.
Right.
It's just the 30 seconds in the mobile version, unless you pay for it. That's what it says.
Well, I'm not disagreeing. What did it say in the...
Now, the US one doesn't say that. It's hard to tell.
And they don't have the FAQ up anymore.
But I did
they had an FAQ up, they took it down.
I looked at a chart. They had a chart that said what's offered and what's not offered. And they said that on the website, once it scans your music, on the free version, you can play all your songs on the web.
Right.
If you upgrade to the paid version, then you can play all your songs on your phone. If you don't, you only get 30-second snippets on your phone.
So you basically you get
– why even offer that? I don't even understand. It doesn't make any sense.
You get these applications and you can listen to 30 seconds of your songs, or you can go and pay $4 a month to listen to all of your songs on mobile. And that's available on Android and BlackBerry, but the iOS application only supports the free version. So really, what's the point of that? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't recall. I think in the Europe one, it supports it also. I think. I'm not 100% sure, but I remember seeing, oh, yeah, it works with the iPhone.
Well, the problem is, too, like there's different licenses for each continent. So what actually happens there doesn't necessarily
say
what's going to happen. You know, I agree. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
That's why we don't have Spotify here yet anything.
Yeah, exactly.
But so here's the thing. I actually signed up for the European account. I went to the co.uk. It's called My Music Now. And actually signed up for it to see if it works. And it does. It seems to work pretty well. I hadn't finished, you know, matching and uploading all my songs, but it had started and it worked, unlike the Best Buy one, which didn't work. Brian and I were very frustrated by the whole thing. We were like, have you gotten this thing to work? Can you get it to work? Is it uploading songs? I'm like, it's crashing. I thought it was because I had the beta iTunes. It just wasn't working at all. But let's talk about what the service is.
Yeah,
essentially. Well, aside from the scan match,
it's a paid music locker basically, and that's it really. And one upside they have is that basically if you go and buy a physical CD from Best Buy, they will scan the receipt for you, and then by 8 a.m. the following morning, that track will appear in your locker. Which is a positive if you want to buy physical CDs. And that's my whole problem with the entire service. It doesn't really seem to go and be a digital-centric focused solution or even one – I mean we disagree on this next thing. But even in terms of like laying the groundwork for them in the future, it seems basically to me to simply be an incentive to keep buying physical CDs and if anything, a defensive move against Amazon in the physical CD sales realm versus digital.
Maybe. I mean I think – physical CD sales still account for half of
online
huge business. It's big business. Yeah. I mean, it's going to go away eventually. Eventually, that's gone, and they're just not going to have it anymore.
Yeah, but that's years from now.
They say it's moving faster and faster, but it's still a few years off.
Yeah.
Definitely. Before it's gone completely.
Oh, yeah. The current stats are by next year, digital will overtake, physical. Right. But right now it's still neck and neck.
But I still know people our age that buy physical CDs.
Well, I honestly, if there's a band that I like, I prefer to buy physical CDs.
And I definitely know
CDs,
my parents
talked about.
Buy physical CDs, yeah. And stuff like that. I like that concept of buy something and then you can play it anywhere you want. I mean, I think that's an interesting, without having to rip it or anything, all of a sudden it's in your cloud. And it looks like they offer the service in other devices too, or they're planning on it. I don't know about the US, but
right.
It looks
like car warehouse in the UK has a deal with the same technology.
Yeah, and some hotels could have it on their screen. So it's very similar to what we talked about a few weeks back.
Sure.
With the ultraviolet system. It actually sounds almost the same thing,
right,
as the ultraviolet, doesn't it?
It does, and the Catch Media solution, this Play Anywhere thing, it's basically was a collaboration between the RIAA, from what I understand.
Well, they don't
own
it.
And the recording industry, basically. It was kind of like, just like Ultraviolet was, it was kind of like a collaboration with the industry.
They don't own it. Ultraviolet's owned by all those companies.
Like, no, I'm saying it's like the idea of doing the standard that kind of thing.
Right.
Here's the thing. I don't get – of course you want to buy something, you want to have it everywhere. This doesn't seem to me to be – what they're focusing on is very, very unclear to me, because I think people that are buying physical CDs, that isn't necessarily the same market as people that are buying digital music. I think, not all the time.
But they're still using their – even people that buy digital CDs are still ripping them into their iTunes and using their – and using iPods.
I agree with that.
And have their iPhones and all that stuff.
But here's the thing. Why would I go and buy a service that it's only – there's no incentive to get this Best Buy thing. It's not cheaper than any of the other options.
What?
It doesn't offer me any upside. In terms of my flexibility with what I can buy stuff to download, it ties me only to physical media. It just seems a very, very odd solution that doesn't have any benefits or anything that differentiates it from the other services that have launched since that seem very much superior. And plus, Best Buy, their core competency is physical sales, brick and mortar stores. Digital is not their thing. I think that's probably stands the reason why they're not building their own, service here. They're basically going and using somebody else's service and putting the Best Buy brand on it.
Yes, I think they are now. But I don't think they're idiots. I think they know that that is going away.
I thought they have to. They can't be.
That's what I mean. And this just, to me, it just gives value, an added value to people that buy the physical CDs still. And it just, price point's terrible. Mm-hmm. Imagine if they said, okay, $25 a year for this.
Right.
That's way more attractive. And we don't know what they're going to charge in the US because this is just beta and.
Well, I think
is exactly the same as the European site.
I think all the stuff that leaked here, all the, the FAQ, all that stuff had been written. I think that stuff's all accurate in terms of what you can do with what stuff and how much stuff costs. Because it wasn't listed in pounds. It was listed in dollars and cents.
Right.
That wasn't just a copy.
Somebody like my dad, he doesn't really, he uses his iPhone. He loves his iPhone. He's a very computer literate guy. But he doesn't rip music. He doesn't really buy music.
Right.
Off of digital,
mm-hmm.
Maybe buy CDs and stuff sometimes. Guy like that, he would totally use the service.
Where does your dad buy music more often? Where does he mostly buy CDs?
At the store.
At the stores?
Yeah, at the store.
See, I think...
That's the thing. There are a lot of people that I don't, and I don't get why you still would, but
clearly
there are a ton of people that still do that. So if you're one of those people... This seems like a great idea. Aside from it costing too much.
If you're one of those people, though, that, doesn't want to deal with technology to the degree that you don't even go and rip your CDs to your computer. Are you really what is the use of a scan and match service? That's what doesn't make sense to me. It's not a full featured solution.
Sure.
If they released a store with this, which would require them to go and and I think they're not, one of the reasons I think they're not going to, at least not anytime soon, is that this isn't their own technology. This isn't their own internally developed thing. This is them basically just saying, Catch Media, we want to use your thing. They're doing a store. They would kind of build their own service up, get their own licensing, all that stuff.
But they're a partner of this Ultraviolet too, and they didn't create that either.
But that has nothing to do with being a store. I'm talking about, as far as them making a digital storefront.
But
I think that would be something they would do unto themselves.
It's going to be the same thing, and primarily with movies, and that's they have big DVD sales, and this Ultraviolet's going to be the same thing. You buy a physical DVD there. That's part of the Ultraviolet consortium, and then it's the same exact thing as a CD. It's available in the cloud.
And
it's available on your device.
And the one thing that's similar with both of these things is they're not actually designed to go and be digital replacements for the buying experience.
They're
designed to go and encourage the continued buying of physical media. And I think that's where it breaks down ultimately. Because
I don't think it's to encourage. I just don't think it's to discourage.
Well, I think it's
I think it's just addition. It's just adding on to me, opposed to removing.
See, to me, it's just like when they said when you had like HD DVDs and or Blu-rays, and it came with a regular DVD as well. So it encouraged you to go and buy that, and you know, to rebuy something. It's not necessarily offering a better solution. It's kind of saying, oh no, this cloud thing's really cool that all the kids are talking about. We'll give you that too if you buy your regular CD.
I think that's part of it, but I also think that I think some companies are stupid. I think these companies, I have never seen them to be dumb.
I disagree. I think Best Buy has been very, very stupid in this digital stuff. You mentioned it before. They originally had a plan where you could go and buy MP3s.
But they never did it.
But they were developing this idea where you could go and buy MP3s at a kiosk, and you would bring a USB drive to the store and download it.
I know.
It's once again, they think from the physical retailer mentality instead of, you know, a digital storefront mentality.
Right.
Because I mean, and it makes sense. It's not their bag.
But just imagine eventually this is going to go away. And like I said, I think they're not stupid. I think they know eventually the physical CD sales are not going to be there.
Of
right.
Course.
They launch this service and if they do it right, they're going to promote the crap out of it. And it's going to be everywhere you check out. It's going to be everywhere in the store. They're going to promote the hell out of it if they do it right. They position themselves to get a lot of users from the store.
Well, for a lot of people to go and try it. Because here's what I think ultimately happens. I think they're actually long-term, they screw themselves a bit because they don't have a store now. Because what I think is going to happen, if you go and get people used to using a cloud service, you know, people like you said, like your dad that wouldn't normally use, when they go, oh, this is great. You know, but suddenly because they get used to going and thinking of music in terms of digital files and just access and not like medium.
Right.
Then basically they're going to, at some point, your dad's going to be out somewhere and want to go and buy a song on the spot. You know, either from his Android device or his, you know, BlackBerry or from his iPhone.
Right.
And he's going to want to go and, you know, go search a digital store wherever he can do that with his device. And I feel like it's going to push people. It's going to condition people to get more used to that idea and push them to buy music digitally. And if Best Buy has no solution to support their cloud service, they lose that customer. Like, I don't think it positions them well long term. I think it kind of harms them.
Right. Right.
I agree that they need to do something to get in the game. I think doing a cloud with no storefront backing it up is just weird, and that's why I think it's not about digital storefront intentions. I think it's all about prolonging the buying of physical CDs.
I think that's part of it, but I also think that they're positioning so because if they don't do something like this, they have no shot.
At least
this gives them a shot because otherwise they turn into Blockbuster.
I disagree.
They turn into Blockbuster.
A digital store gives them a shot. I've yet to hear any reason why this positions them, really positions them, other than saying it positions them. Like, run me through the scenario where that actually
But if it were me, and obviously it's not me, but if it were me, this would be the jumping point to a digital store. And I think it can be if they want it to be. And I don't know if they're developing it or not. Nobody knows. But it's very easy to jump from this to a digital store.
But how does that work for people? Because all I see is people use this and then they decide they want to buy stuff digitally. And Best Buy doesn't offer that. So they go elsewhere.
But maybe they'll like the service.
But they can get this same service with the ability to buy songs from other people for cheaper.
Correct. They can right now.
You know, yeah. And all it needs to take, honestly, is for Amazon to say like, oh, guess what? You buy a physical CD and you also get it in your cloud drive and this is dead and gone.
Probably true.
You know, and I would not be surprised if that happens in the next year.
That's this concept, though.
But that's my thing.
Is that not this concept?
Well, but it's both. Amazon has both.
I mean, and also, like, use-wise, from the reviews I read in Europe, people really like the service.
Well, anything.
It's successful, and people like it.
The only things I read about being successful were, like, the propaganda Best Buy pamphlets.
There were some reviews and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
There were reviews and ratings. Best Buy pamphlets that were very, very funny, where they're like, oh, it's the best service ever. I can see myself using it all the time.
No, I saw that.
I don't see how it really goes and draws people to this. I mean, I know you say like there's a digital something and that makes people want to do a more digital something. But in terms of like actually using something, people use this for 6 months and like a cloud and they want all the flexibility of the cloud. They'll go for Amazon or iCloud or the Google, you know, platform or Amazon's.
Maybe they will. Maybe they still want to buy physical CDs. Like, the friends that I have that buy physical CDs buy all their music physical because they like owning the physical CD.
Sure.
I mean, you know, some people just aren't going to not.
And another question, are those people that like the physical CDs, are they going to be okay with streaming 128K or 128, you know, like MP3s? It is the lowest possible quality. It's Lex DeLois only via our – actually, it's the same way we encode our podcasts.
Right.
It's the same bit rate.
But I'm just saying if – the price point I think is terrible, but if this was something that was $25 a year, I think they would sell a crap load of this to everyone walking out the door at Best Buy.
I disagree. I think if it was,
$5 a month doesn't make sense with the other services out there.
I think they need to go. I think they need to have a store. I think they need a full featured solution.
Unlimited storage for the $5 a month, by the way, which is more than Amazon. Amazon starts charging you after 5 gigs.
Sure.
So, I mean, price point wise, not as good as what Apple's going to offer.
It depends. I think most people that basically are using this service and already have their music ripped aren't going to be having 5 gigs of music necessarily, because these are 128K files. That doesn't take.
I'm saying there's no storage limit on this.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think a lot of people aren't going to have music to go past that Amazon limit.
Definitely possible.
I just think
it's interesting because I
think it's interesting that they're doing something. I think what they're doing is I think it's going to fail. I think
like the concept of buying something in the store and then having it, like buying something physical and then having it be digital and available on multiple devices.
I totally agree.
There's something to that.
I totally agree.
That I really like. I think this is a step to that.
I absolutely agree. I don't think they're the ones that are going to get it done. If anybody does it, I think it'll be Amazon. I think Amazon actually is in a pole position to do that.
Yeah, they are.
Because I think the way they're going about it is dooming it to fail. I agree with you, though. I would love to go and not have to rip something. However, I don't want to go and get this and get it, like terrible quality. You know what I mean? I can't listen to it, but it's not available on all devices. Like the idea is awesome, of course, because you want, like, whenever you buy anything, you want, ubiquitous access to that content. If you buy a DVD, I want to be able to watch it anywhere.
You know what it goes to? And this is just not about this service now anymore, really, but it goes to, I was talking to some of my friends who still buy CDs.
Yeah.
Because I was curious. I'm like, why do you guys buy CDs?
I
have not bought a CD in so long. Honestly, it's been years.
I bought one a week ago.
Buy them all the time.
Yeah,
every CD. That's all they do. They don't buy digital music. And I was trying to think about it. And back in before CDs, mm-hmm. records and tapes. When you bought something, you were actually buying a record of the music, right?
Right.
As soon as it moved to CDs, and this is something I've been thinking about. I've been wanting to talk to you about because it's interesting. As soon as it moved to CDs, the CD is just the delivery device for the digital file.
Right.
You stopped buying the music. You started buying access to the music.
Well, the license didn't change at that point.
It has now gone to that mindset now with what Apple's doing and no DRM and all that stuff.
I think digital files, it definitely, because I think the license, when you buy a digital file these days, you actually aren't buying that file. You're buying the right to access the information
and
in that file.
I think even though nobody knew that then, right when CDs started to come out, that's what started to happen, even though that really wasn't conceptually what it was. Because if you think about it, a CD, all a CD is no difference between a CD and a hard drive or a cloud storage site. It's just the delivery device for those digital files.
I would disagree only in this. I think that because when CDs came out, the quality was so much higher than anything we had before. They were all viewed as an archival medium.
Mm-hmm.
So when you buy this CD, you're never going to have to buy another CD.
Oh, totally.
And I think – so once we went to digital, I agree with you 100%. I don't think it's – I wouldn't –
But it
I,
still
I don't know
wasn't,
for me if it started with CD.
Like on – it still wasn't grooves in a record. It was still a digital file on a disc.
Well, it's not that. It's pits in a piece of plastic that go and like make up that digital file. It's just that to me is a little bit iffy because
isn't that what a hard drive is? It's the same thing.
Well, I mean,
there's no difference between a CD and a hard drive,
There's not really music in a record. There's just like, grooves that move that go and help reproduce sound when you put it through an amplifier. And same with tape. There's not actually music living on the tape.
But you can't take it off there.
You can take it off of a tape. Record over it? Like, I don't understand what you mean.
No. I'm saying, like, a CD or a hard drive has files on them.
Right.
Right. And you can remove. I mean, they locked into CDs, but you can technically take a file off.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You can't do that on a record or a tape.
Right. I thought you were saying that, like, the fact that you could go and, like, over it made it. Yeah,
Saying, like, it was – I don't think it was thought of this way.
Right.
But it was that was the start of moving us to that way of thinking.
Where music isn't tied to physical objects.
Right.
It is transferable.
Exactly. No one was thinking that way back then, or really was it that? But I'm saying now, today, in today's day and age, buying a CD to me – someone opposed to buying digital music,
mm-hmm.
not just by choice, but like some people are opposed to it. Like they want to own their CD. Aside from the cover art and the box, there's no difference in buying it online because you're owning the right to play it anywhere you want now.
Here's
it's
the one,
different
here,
now.
Here,
it's
here,
different
here's
now.
The one difference is that when you go and buy a digital file, you are buying – that piece of music encoded at that bit rate, and it can never change. And it's all of it is lossy. None of it is like actually, you know, none of it is, you know, but, lossless recordings.
But,
whereas CD, you can basically, you can always re-rip that at a higher bit rate. You can always make that sound. As technology improves and storage space increases, you can always go and take that CD and make an increasingly, making a digital reproduction with, you know, increasing resolution, basically.
Sure, sure. But you're not, I mean, you're not, especially now with the no DRM and all that stuff, buying even CDs now, you're buying the right to play the music as opposed to buying the CDs anymore, even though you're purchasing them.
Yeah. I still see the differentiation, though, because there are benefits to having CDs versus digital.
But eventually
digital.
There won't be.
When everything eventually is, when everything is lossless.
Know, which they're slow, you know.
Then also, there is something, too, about the physical, even though it's smaller than records. You know, I grew up on tapes. I didn't grow up on records. So to me, the notion that like
CDs. You never bought records when you were younger?
Not really. Really? I mean, like when I was a kid, I got like 45s in there. You know,
oh,
like,
really?
There's a great like Star Wars, you know, Star Wars movie storybook 45 that was fantastic.
I totally remember buying my first record.
And my parents had records, but when I was buying my own music, it was in tapes already. So that was – CDs were a step up because they were bigger. So I didn't really have the problem with like, you know, CDs are sacrilege because they're not as big as the beautiful, you know, double gatefold, you know, record albums are. So I never got that. But I think that I do have an affinity and an attachment to the physical, you know, liner notes and that kind of thing that come with a CD. That is special. And you – iTunes Plus, like, you know, PDFs, no matter what you want to do, nothing can really replicate that. Looking at a screen.
No, very true.
I mean, I guess maybe in a tablet device you get something close, but it's not the same. Holding the paper is different, you know?
It is. And I get it on a collector level. I just don't get it as being opposed to the digital download.
I'm not opposed. To me, it's like they're just different tiers. It's like if there's something I know I'm going to keep forever and I want to go and, you know, let's say I have a lot of stuff ripped at like, you know, 128 AAC and I want to bump it up to 196. Like I can do that. If it's something I don't care about, if it's more like, you know, not disposable music, but it's more like, you know, pop music that I'm not going to have a close emotional tie with it, you know, for like 20 years. I have no problems buying it digitally.
I mean, I think the only way I would buy a physical CD now, or even I won't buy movie. I was never a big movie buyer. We talked about that. Yeah. But a physical CD is if it came in some sort of box display that I wanted to actually display out for people to see. Otherwise, there's no way I would buy. There's just no way.
I don't see any.
It's just so convenient, and I can get it faster, and I can get more music, and you know, and for the most part, cheaper.
Yeah, I don't see any point to go and to buying a movie at all, even digitally anymore. And we have some different on this, but for the most part, except for special use cases like kids' movies, I don't ever see the point of ever buying a movie again. You know,
right.
Renting. I mean, music is different because you listen to it a lot more, but
right.
That definitely has changed, yeah.
So just interesting on, you know, with this music cloud and the ultraviolet.
Yeah, and that, I mean, honestly, concept. And that's why I have the opinion of ultraviolet that I do. I think it's all about pushing physical media because people ain't buying it anymore.
Right. Well, I don't think so. I think the ultraviolet's going to – I mean, you're going to be able to download stuff directly and have it be part of ultraviolet without buying the physical media. That's part of the deal.
Yeah.
So well, it's just that you can play it wherever the hell you want.
We'll see. Is there any information yet about when it's supposedly launching or what devices
there's
or anything?
Kind of a big delay, which is strange because they have all their ducks in a row. It doesn't surprise me actually
because I think because who's
well because think about like
is
what
Google,
Apple's
is Google,
doing.
Is Google
with,
on board with it?
I don't know actually.
And is Amazon on board with it?
I have to look at the list. It's a huge list.
If Amazon is on board, I could see them launching it with like the new here's the thing. It's not in the best interest of, you know, Amazon to go and release that kind of thing and have it be applicable everywhere because they want to go and push their tablets. They want to go and, you know, they want people to go and buy media from them.
That's true.
So it's not really in the best interest. It's good. It's smart for all the vendors to go and play ball and be on the list, but it's not really in their best interest to really push the technology in opposition to their own, you know, solutions.
It's true. I'm not sure. And it's weird. I honestly thought we would be seeing devices, ultraviolet, like, branded stuff already.
We've had this conversation before. Anytime that you have the industry in question, the entrenched powers behind a new standard, behind a new technology standard, to me, I'm just very, very suspect.
Well,
of
I mean, think about
the
like,
execution of it.
What Apple's doing right now with the iTunes cloud stuff is very similar in concept, except that there's no locks on the music.
Sure.
Conceptually, same thing. That you log into your account and you can download it to your different devices and all the same thing, except that I can go on there and copy it off and give it to my friend if I want.
Right.
You know, in the movie business, can they do something like that?
Not for a long time. The movie business is still very much entrenched that it's
But I mean, like,
terrible.
Even if they, I mean, I have to say, if the movies downloadable were DRM free, I would be playing movies for my friends all the time.
Yeah, well, and here's what's not
more so than music.
Yeah, and we're getting off topic a little bit, but I mean, but no, but here's why Ultraviolet's not smart. That kind of situation, it's like you can access anywhere. That's really neat, but it's not going to make me buy more movies. I want to go and watch more movies, and if it costs me $20, $10 to buy a movie, still, I'm not going to spend that money just because it's accessible everywhere. Will I rent it for $2? Yes.
But if you bought, let's say you bought it, and you go to a hotel that has Ultraviolet, and you log into your account, and you can watch your library of movies.
But when I would I, but if it cost me $10, why would I go and buy that?
Why not?
I'm saying if I don't want to spend $10 seems too expensive. I think basically to buy a movie, because like I don't watch tons of movies. I mean, the movies that I watch over and over again, I've already bought on DVD. Done.
Right.
You know, so moving forward, I think it's the same thing with like MP3 sales. It's like you lower the price point low enough, and it's going to go and encourage adoption. It's going to go and encourage people to go and like, you know, use it more. I think they could, if they said we're going to go and allow everybody to rent stuff for $2 or $3, whatever it was, and worried more about making great solutions for that.
Yeah, I just don't like rental. That's why I don't do Netflix and I don't do any of that stuff.
Really? You got to get on Netflix.
I mean, aside from – that's the thing. I don't watch movies over and over again. You know, we've talked about that.
Well,
I just don't do it.
And that's why buying makes no sense.
No, but it does, because the movies I do watch over and over again are only a select few.
But if you don't buy movies over and over again, renting – like if you don't buy movies over and over again, rental makes more sense for you.
But I have to pay for rentals every month as opposed to once for a movie.
Well, not if it's like, you know, I'm not talking about like subscription rental. I'm talking about like, you know, you don't want to rent a movie instead of buy it. I'm not talking about subscription.
Oh, just
about
renting a one time. Yeah. But, you know, let's say I watch Back to the Future 3 or 4 times a year.
Well, that's your movie.
Say I watch Back to the Future.
Rental's not going to apply for you in Back to the Future.
But just conceptually, let's say I do. I watch it a couple times a year, right? Of course I want to buy that. I don't want to rent that every time and over a period of however many years I spent so much money on that movie.
Green Lantern. Do you see Green Lantern in the theaters?
No.
Okay. Green Lantern comes out in video. You really want to go and see it. The only way to go and see it is to buy it for $10. Would you buy it?
If that's – no, no.
Would you rent it for $2?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying.
But that's why the rental market exists.
Yeah.
Because people still want to rent, but they still want to buy.
Correct. And I think the case for buying is shrinking and the case for renting is expanding. And whether that's, you know, subscription or renting, whatever, I think
it's going to fully go away?
It's not going to go away completely, no. But I think there's
something to support it.
I'm saying that there needs to be all these solutions. Like Ultraviolet, they're all about supporting buying, which isn't basically moving towards what people necessarily really want, I think. I think there needs to be, you know, a rental solution, I think, is what people would more commonly like to use. Or VOD, like all that stuff. That's where everything is moving except for this stuff.
Right.
You know, if you buy it, if you do buy it, I love the idea of it being everywhere.
But
absolutely.
They're saying, you know, they're like – like VOD stuff. They're even, you know, they're saying this Ultraviolet's going to be accessible in your cable box. So the stuff you've bought, you have your library of movies that you own.
I just need more solutions other than stuff I bought, because I'm not going to buy movies moving forward at all.
But imagine, you know, what if you have both?
I'm saying that's
Wouldn't
fine.
Would you want that?
Of course. That's what I mean, like I said, I love the idea of buying stuff and having it accessible everywhere. I don't think that they are moving towards the rental solution at all. They're focused on selling stuff.
No, they're not. Yeah.
And that's my problem with it.
But, you know, I think that they can coexist with a rental service. They don't have to be the rental service also.
Like I said, I think the interests of the entrenched powers are to go and like sell, and stick to the current model as much as possible.
Apple is doing this already with their movies.
No, I know what I'm saying.
They're their own Ultraviolet.
Of course. But I'm saying in terms of like – and they have problems going and renting certain movies because they can't get the rights from the various, you know, content providers. I think that's my problem with it. It's all this focus on trying to go and keep the sales market alive when I think people really want something different. People want subscription. People want rental. People want, you know, more flexibility.
Right.
They both should exist. We need both. But I'm saying I feel like all the effort from the entrenched, powers are towards sale only.
By the way, Netflix is part of Ultraviolet.
Great.
So I'm just saying they're fully rental. So if you had Netflix with Ultraviolet, you would have the best of both worlds.
Or is it that? Or is it that you can watch Ultraviolet movies through the Netflix interface?
That's what I think it is. That's what I mean.
You know what I'm saying? Like there's not
– No, that's what it is. But you don't pay – you're not paying a service fee for Ultraviolet.
Here's what I'm saying is like, are they partners? Does that mean that they're going to go and offer Netflix stuff through Ultraviolet, i.e. everywhere? Or does that mean you can watch your Ultraviolet library through a Netflix app interface?
I think that's what it means.
You know, so to me, it's like
fantastic.
Well, it's just
you get the best of both worlds. I'm not paying a monthly fee for Ultraviolet. So I get my Netflix. I pay my monthly fee for my rentals. And then I get to play the movies I already own. That's awesome.
Of course.
So I mean
that to me is not a plus for Ultraviolet, though, because that has the two discrete services. Like it's, you know,
Ultraviolet's not a paid service. You know, it's a standard. It's different. It's not paid. So you can't. They're not apples to apples.
I guess I'm just saying, like, what you just described isn't some sort of revolutionary thing. It's like ultraviolet exists, then that's going to be available everywhere. The fact that like it can be accessed within Netflix isn't necessarily a mind blower to me.
But it doesn't exist right now.
Right.
You don't have that. Netflix doesn't give you that option.
Well, ultraviolet doesn't exist right now.
Well, that's true.
So it's not like I said. They're not big apples.
They're not apples to apples. It's a standard that is going to be supported by the likes of Netflix.
When it comes out, like I said, I think I love the idea of buying stuff and be able to watch it anywhere. I think long term, buying stuff isn't where things are going, and I wish more effort was being put towards different, you know, more disruptive models. That's all.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Fair enough.
So speaking of, you had another thing on, what is it, the Pogo you want to talk about?
Oh, yeah. So speaking in the realm of cloud services, there's a service called Pogo that came out a couple years ago, actually, and it was a device. It was a hard drive, networked hard drive that you would plug in, and once it was plugged into your network, you would have access to anything on that hard drive from the web. So pretty much it was your own personal cloud. You'd set it up and you had streaming music, movies, access to your documents, all that stuff. There's an app for the phone, web interface, all those things. Conceptually, I think it was a great kind of ahead of its time thing.
Mm-hmm.
The other week, they launched a software-only version of that service, which I love. I started using it just to test it out. The concept of having the cloud, your own cloud, I think is great. I'm not... If I wanted to, with speeds of internet getting faster and faster, and I kind of brought something like I brought this up the other week, saying I thought it would be cool if somebody did something like this, and now there is. You don't have to rely on Amazon or Apple or Google or wherever to host your music. You don't have to pay a monthly fee for your storage space. It takes your computer at home, and it's the storage for your cloud. So you're directly accessing your own machine from outside of the home, and it works great. I mean, it's really pretty seamless. You can stream video files, so you can actually watch streaming video from your home machine on your device, on your computer.
There's actually something called music, Air Video that was out. I mean, this is a great concept, there's a solution for called Air Video for like iPhones and iPads that I think was out a year ago, two years ago. It's the same thing, but I tried it out, but I'm not using
it. Is it just video
enough.
Though?
I can't remember if it's video or audio and video.
But this is audio, video, and files.
But it's an awesome concept.
Yeah. I mean, there's something to be said. I mean, yeah, like putting stuff up to Google servers and up to Apple servers and up to Amazon servers is cool, but you lose a little bit of control.
Right.
You know, you're paying someone a storage fee every month. If you don't have to do that, I think that's fantastic. I mean, will this be something that I move to? I don't know. Maybe not. But it's very cool. The interface is nice. It's not the best, but they're still working on it.
Was there one thing I don't like about these solutions that you have to leave your computer on all the time?
You do.
Now, I was reading about something. I can't remember.
Because you're accessing your machine. You're not
accessing. Right. There was a way to go and actually have an external drive be accessible. I can't remember what the router was. There was something.
Well, the Pogo has.
Is that where?
That's their original service was just a network drive.
Okay. Because that to me is a lot more interesting because honestly, I have a laptop as my main computer, so I'm always taking it with me or I have it around. Even if I don't have a place where I can – if I'm at work, I have it in a bag.
Oh, no. You need a desktop machine on all the time, which a lot of people do. But I just – I can see this concept, and like you said, a hard drive I think is like the key, but I can see this concept even going into like being part of the AT&T U-verse box. And all of a sudden there's a hard drive in there with cloud storage going over the fiber network at your own. What a cool idea.
Yeah,
very cool. And you can access it. I mean, really the whole idea of the cloud being somewhere that you don't know is interesting to have the cloud being your home.
Definitely.
And actually somewhere where you know where everything is and you're not relying on some big, huge company to be controlling all your files and your data. You know, there's something to that and something very interesting. So Pogo, they have the free – you can download the software for free.
Pogo, the libertarians cloud option.
That's funny. You can download the software for free, but you don't get the streaming part of it.
Uh-huh.
If you pay – I think it's $50 one-time fee, then it unlocks that feature.
Hmm.
Not bad.
Yeah,
not bad at all.
Did you try it?
I got beta news. One of the websites was giving a promo code for free. I think it's over, but so I got to.
Would you spend $50 for it now? Will you?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I have to use it some more.
How long is this?
It's also like I have a laptop too, so no, it's lifetime. I have it.
Okay.
I mean, I have it now forever if I want it. I think I would be inclined to. I think I would.
What are the use cases that you use it most for? Just out of curiosity.
Oh, well, I mean, just like it's got an app just like Google Music and Amazon for music. So right off the bat, you have that to stream your music, which is nice. Totally. The streaming video is very cool.
Now, is that just any video on your hard drive, or is it video only like in a certain library, or is it just whatever you want to access?
You can assign
to it.
Yeah. Cool. So, which is that and the photos. Bringing up the photos is cool, too.
Cool. And does it do like – I mean, I assume, does it do like all the live transcoding thing? If you have a video format that's in one thing, it'll format it so it can –
It's some formats it can play, some it can't.
Gotcha.
You know, so
– Air Video thing does the live transcoding, but it wasn't always necessarily like the best depending on the speed of your machine.
You know,
it had to do, like, do a lot of crunching on the, you know, on the desktop side.
Yeah. It's also got – you know, it's like with the files, it has Dropbox functionality. Yeah. Like from the app, I can pull down a file and download it to my phone if I want to.
Very cool.
Or upload either way. It's nice.
It's a new
thought of the whole cloud thing, you know, and it's not that new. That's what's interesting, you know, like having the cloud not be some mythical place.
Well, it's interesting because it's interesting to go and have it branded like that, because those solutions have existed for a while, like, mm-hmm, you know, in various different ways.
Absolutely.
But to have it kind of like, you know, pitched as that is very interesting.
And you don't need a static IP or anything like that. It just calls out to, it has its own identifier on the web.
Because it's going and pinging your phone, probably not the other way around.
Right.
Yeah.
So you don't need a special business service. You know, to have this, you don't need anything like that.
Do you, what is your upload speed like? Because that's the thing I could see maybe being a problem. Because like home up, like I have great download, but my upload is kind of crap sandwich.
Yeah. And mine is not great either.
Yeah.
And that's what I was saying. Like, it really makes more sense with the newer fiber based services. I think I get like 768 up. And to be honest, even with that, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, streaming to the device and stuff. The file sharing.
Who do you have now? Do you have
Time Warner?
Yeah. The download pack, which package do you have? You have like the 15?
15. Or,
the download is really good. I mean, it's really nice and it's consistent.
It's very nice. It's very nice. But, you know, like anybody that gets the basic package of Fios or AT&T has got a couple of meg upload.
Well, if you get the basic package of Fios, you're already like a Wi-Fi ninja and internet ninja, and you basically.
But I think it's all, you know, it's all going to that and all just fully wireless. You know, like we're like upload speeds aren't going to be as limited. There'll still be less than the downloads, but you're going to see it. You know, the standard's probably going to be 1.5. You know, eventually,
which honestly is terrible. I mean, like the fact that it's like 2012 and that's where it's really at. Like, really?
Well, you know, I mean, they do it so they can offer the faster downloads.
Yeah,
it's the same pipe. They could, if they, for we're getting a 15 meg download and 768K upload, they can easily offer a 7 and 7.
Yeah.
But then you're max at 7 down.
I think most people would actually prefer that, because I feel like today
maybe.
We do so much more uploading that we don't even realize. There's so much network access that you don't even realize you're doing it. Like if you like ever like, I have this, what app is it? There's something I have a control panel on my Mac installed. Basically, just networks all, you know, monitors all my network activity. And every now and then, you just go up there and, like, it's amazing how many things are, you know, accessing the internet. When you have very few applications, you don't even realize. Nothing active, you don't think.
Yeah, you don't.
And something's always happening.
It's true. Yeah. It's very true.
And I've really noticed it, too. Like, with the Google, I have the Google Music Manager. And, like, that always, like, and I notice, like, a slowdown there. Because it's always, like, you know, any type of, you know, internet interaction, it slows
that
sucker down.
And people doing backups and doing, like, especially with the cloud, iCloud coming out.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it makes sense in the sense that, it makes sense because downloads are much easier to market. I can go and get, you know, you can get like 5,000 photos in 1 millisecond. Like that's easier to sell than like, oh, you can upload such and such to some server 20%
faster. But
with
like video chat and all that stuff and voice over IP.
But you can't quantify that stuff with like numbers, you know what I mean? And like they always try to sell it on like numbers, like, you know, like how quick
fast
is this
you can
number?
Download a movie or how many songs you can
download.
This many
songs in this amount of time,
So Pogo, try it out. You know, worth trying the free service. I mean, there's no downside to that. It's basically that Dropbox kind of functionality, except you don't, like if your computer's not on, you don't have access to those files. They are not stored anywhere but your own machine.
Right.
Which is cool. So
very cool.
Pogo. Check it out.
Pogo.
Doo-doo. Any other tech stuff?
There's always more stuff.
Well, there's always
more
stuff.
We are running long on
time. Okay, well then let's go food here. I was going to talk about a couple of things. I will briefly mention something and then briefly mention something else instead of going into major details. I was in Chicago last week.
Oh, that's right.
There's a restaurant in the suburbs of Chicago called Bob Chin's Crab House.
Wait. Bob Chin's Crab House.
Crab.
Okay. That's why I had to check. I'm honestly, that was not a joke. That was me. I thought that was
me.
Some
I
sort
love
like,
the Crab House, man.
I thought that was like some very, very funny, like, you know, crazy named restaurant. If there was something called Bob Chin's Crab House, you would be there.
Without a doubt.
Okay. I'm glad I checked.
Bob Chin's, CRAB house, crab house, king crab, king craps.
I just meant it was a gambling facility, right?
It's always rated as one of the top restaurants in the country, this place. But, you know, it's kind of one of those like sawdust on the floor.
Just what you expect from a crap house.
I can't win. You're right.
I'm sorry.
Anyway, they have awesome food. I'm not going to go into details, but I had this crab.
Go into details. Stuffed. Come on. Go into details.
Okay. So normally when I go there, it's like crab legs and steak and, you know, the whole thing. And they have awesome for a seafood restaurant. This mm-hmm. place has amazing steaks. They just have awesome fillets and just really perfectly seasoned. You know, you don't need anything else with it. The way it comes out, it's just amazing. So they do awesome surf and turf stuff. Cool. You know, it's really good. But I went there for lunch, which I never had been. And they had lunch specials. And I had this crab stuffed sea bass. Crab stuffed Asian sea bass. C-R-A-B stuffed Asian sea bass. Brian's crying over here.
I'm not. I'm totally good. I don't know what you're talking about.
And it had a hollandaise sauce on the top. It was delicious. It was so good. It was like a poached sea bass with the crab meat stuffed in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And then
was the crab meat seasoned at all, or is it just straight up?
You know, I think it was just straight up.
Okay.
And then the hollandaise sauce on the top. It was a really cool – it was very rich.
How is that? Because sometimes I've had, you know, Benedict with hollandaise with some sort of like seafood, like salmon or whatever.
I'm not a huge fan.
And it doesn't really work. It gets a little bit gamey, a little fishy, and I'm not really a big fan.
This works because it's all fish. You know, like you're not – you don't have the egg and the bread and the whole –
to offset it.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you're not – you're expecting fish. You're expecting fish flavor, and the hollandaise sauce is addition.
Got it. That makes sense.
So yeah, I understand. Totally get what you're saying, because like a salmon Benedict, I'm never really a huge fan of,
yeah.
You know, or I've had those kind of
Definitely.
Exact same thing. For this, it works because you don't have the other thing. You know what I mean?
It's primarily fish. Yeah. Dish, yeah.
So really delicious. They have these amazing garlic rolls at this place, like, right, you know, hot, warm out of the oven, garlic butter dripping off the sides of these things. I mean, they're just incredible.
Are they better or worse than the garlic knots at I'm drawing a blank. I'm in Venice. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, I do. The Italian place.
Cino Trattoria.
Yes, you know. Better.
I don't think that's possible. I'm going to take your word for it.
I'm telling you these
things. If you're ever in LA and you haven't been, you want to go to someplace that's really, really fun with a group of people, go to Cino Trattoria.
In Venice.
Fun restaurant. Oh, but the garlic knots are awesome.
They're addictive.
Yeah.
They're addictive.
And you just drink wine out of jars, which is great.
Another thing about Bob Chin's is they make a Mai Tai, which is like one of their specialties, and you can order it online and have it delivered and all this stuff. And they're good and potent, very potent drinks. I went there with my grandma, I don't know, a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And we're there for dinner with my sisters and my grandma, and we're just talking, whatever. And I ordered the Mai Tai, and my grandma's like, "What's that?" And my grandma's like 90 plus, right. You know, at the time, I'm like, "Oh, it's the Mai Tai." She's like, "Well, I'll have one of those too." And I'm sitting there with my 90-year-old grandma, you know, downing. I mean, she drank that thing pretty fast.
Right.
It was pretty incredible. She's like, "Ooh, I really like this." 90-year-old grandma approved Mai Tais from Bob Chin. So you can order those online and have it delivered. If you like Mai Tais, these are some of the best I've ever had. So and high alcohol quotient.
So the question is, did you get hammered?
I did not. I did not. But I did have one at lunch. So
okay,
it was
that's
good.
So – You should have gotten hammered.
I know. But I was flying out. I had to,
well, that's all the more reason. You're going to be on a plane. You can sleep it off.
The other food – by the way, I'm going to Chicago next week. I'm going to be there for 10 days. I'm going to have some major food adventures. I'm going to a place in Chicago by one of the former Top Chef winners, mm-hmm. Which will be very cool. So a little tease. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but I'll talk about it then. And I'm going to obviously be eating a storm in Chicago. So also this week – another food thing, because I have to talk about this because it annoyed me a little bit.
Something annoying you? Never.
In Santa Monica, they opened this new mall called Santa Monica Place. And in Santa Monica Place, they opened this market area, which is kind of like, you know, organic produce and sweets and all this stuff. There's Rock and Wagner Bakery in there and stuff. So there's a little cookie place, okay? And it's called the Cookie Guru. And the Cookie Guru is a little – you can, you know, buy – cookie dough to make at home. You can buy a dozen cookies or whatever, or you can buy just chocolate chip cookies. So the chocolate chip cookies are very normal size cookies. They're not large. They're an average to small size chocolate chip cookie. She charges $3 plus tax for a small chocolate chip cookie. $3 plus tax for a small chocolate chip cookie.
Was the price listed?
Oh, the price is listed. Oh, no. She has every right to charge $3 in tax for a small chocolate chip cookie. And I bought one because I wanted to see how a $3 chocolate chip cookie tasted.
Okay.
Was it good? Yes. It was very good. Was it worth $3 and tax?
No. You're very hung up on the tax thing. No.
Well, you know what? It kind of pissed me off. The tax thing pissed me off. If you go to a place like Sprinkles that sells like the cupcakes, sure, and all that stuff, if you buy a cupcake, it's $3.50 flat. They roll the tax into the price of the cupcakes. You're not giving. I can't give this person $3, you know, or I give them $5 and I get $1.78 in change back. You know, it's for these quick service places where they have one specialty item. It makes sense to have the tax rolled into the price of the item. You got to charge tax. I just didn't like it, you know, being an addition to it. But $3 for a chocolate chip cookie. Come on. Would you pay $3 for a chocolate chip cookie?
It depends how much it was recommended. I wouldn't.
If I said what I just said, that it's good, not the best thing ever, would you pay?
You know, it depends if I was in the mall and how hungry I was and there's another cookie spot. I wouldn't get mad about 25 cents worth of tax. I can't say
I'm not mad about the tax. I'm not mad about the cost of the tax. I'm mad that it's just not rolled into the price. So if you wanted to charge $3.25 or $3.50, fine. But when you get
You should write a harshly worded letter. You should write an email, maybe.
She's going to go out of business. I don't have to do that.
People aren't paying three. You should pick it.
I mean, I don't want to.
You should pick it.
If I'm getting a Sprinkles cupcake for the same price, I'm getting like twice as much food.
I think $3 for Sprinkles is ridiculous, to be honest.
So do I.
But that's if the market will bear it, so be it.
Right. I don't think the market's going to bear this.
Then she'll have to lower her price.
I don't think she can afford to, because I think the space that she's renting is very expensive.
Could be.
I think that's probably why she's charging $3 for a cookie. I just think it's a bad concept for that location to charge that much, especially when I can walk down to Rock and Wagner, you know, two stops down and get a bigger cookie for like $2.
Yeah, but that's not the guru cookie.
It's not the guru cookie. I don't know. I thought there was a lot of – it just shocked me to see a cookie for $3. If it was twice the size, wouldn't have been shocked.
How big? Like how in inches? Describe the size of
a Chips Ahoy cookie.
What you just showed me with your hand is bigger than a Chips Ahoy cookie.
Okay, maybe a tiny bit
Chips
bigger.
Ahoy is like this.
No, but it was a small little cookie. Like, okay, you know like the small cookies you can get at Mrs. Fields? That's what it was.
Yeah, I wouldn't have bought one in the first place.
Well, I had to try it. I'm addicted to chocolate chip cookies.
Yeah, I don't get it.
It was amazing chocolate.
I think you're mad at yourself for having an addiction that you can't break that made you spend $3.25. I think you're mad at yourself.
I'll never go
back. Don't get mad at the guru. Look inside. Look inside.
Guru, you make a good cookie. Just lower your price. If it was $2,
Scott hates himself so much. It's not. Don't be upset. He hates himself so much.
Jamie Duner was there, and he passed on the cookie because it was too expensive.
Exactly.
And that's what I think is going to happen.
And Jamie Duner
did
not.
But I feel bad. I don't want to see a cookie person go out of business.
And Jamie Duner did not hate himself the next morning.
I do not want to see a cookie person go out of business. There are more cookies for the world.
Then why are you trash talking one?
No,
on a podcast that people can hear.
People
will now not try the cookie guru because of what you've done. Yet you say you don't want them to go out of business.
And maybe it will force her to lower her prices. But then she's not going to be able to stay in that space. So it's unfortunate.
So you do want her to go out of business?
No, I want her to lower her prices.
But she can't. You said you think she can.
Then she needs to move to a different location.
So you do want her to go out of business at that location?
Yes.
Wow. You're a nice guy.
I want her to lower her
prices. Classy guy.
That's all. At the end of the day, I want her to, whatever comes of that, that's her own fault.
Classy.
I want her to lower her prices.
High class here at Tech Bacon, ladies and gentlemen.
So $3 chocolate chip cookies if you want them at Santa Monica Place at the market. The cookie guru.
On that note...
That's all I got.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. Once again, if you like the show, please rate us up on iTunes. You can go and say hey to us on Twitter at @TechBacon or me, Brian, at BC Bishop, or Scott at ScottyG7, the number 7 on Twitter.
We are also now available on Stitcher Radio if you want to listen there.
Yep, exactly. And you can always email us at Brian or Scott at TechBacon.net or Lies at TechBacon.net. That is set up last week. Yeah.
So if you find any falsehoods on the web,
if you find any terrible, terrible lies about food, you can let us know. Anyway, thanks for joining us, guys. I'm Brian.
I'm Scott.
Take care.